they would always get us confused, which is funny because I had dreadlocks. She did.
Yeah.
She did not. Like, no, I'm Seuss. She's Julie. You know. So there. And then just trying to stand out, I think, within the community, because unfortunately, the when I worked upstate as a traveling therapist, what's known of us, you know, what people see on television is that Blacks are seen a certain way. We're seen as we speak a certain way. We speak with a certain jargon. We don't necessarily speak intellectually. So to find that and to hear that coming from someone and then a woman sometimes can be a little bit shocking, to say the least. So I really put a good foot effort just trying to, you know, just trying to put, you know, just trying to give us a better name, because I think in these streets, unfortunately, as Blacks, we don't necessarily get that. So I was able to leverage it enough where by the time I left, a lot of the surgeons were like, I need you to start a practice and I need you to start it now, which was kind of what I needed in terms of confidence. However, I didn't start it, obviously, because that was back in 2009.
Come on, Jabbo, let's get funky.
And welcome to Move Evolution's Heal, Move, and Evolve podcast. Treating the pain, movement, and performance disorder of the athlete, fitness enthusiast, performing artist, and musician. Folks that move for a living and live to move. My name is Richard Simister, physical therapist, strength and conditioning coach, percussionist, and dancer. And my mission is to treat and educate my clients and you towards improved healing, fundamental movement, and life performance. Heal, move, evolve. Welcome back to the Heal, Move, and Evolve, Move Evolution podcast. I am Richard Simister, your gracious and humble host. And this is a topic very dear and near and dear to me. And I'd like to call the theme, name the theme, physical therapists are greedy. And I'll explain what I mean by that. I'm in Brooklyn right now, Brooklyn-based physical therapist. And since I've been on my own for 8 years, or been since I've been a therapist for 25 years, I've seen a lot of companies, individual outfits throwing out big nets. They're trying to encompass the entire community. There's no specialty. And I learned early on that in order to succeed, you should have some sort of niche or specialty. Short story that I had a business partner. We were doing very well, but we were very general. And after about 7 or 8 years, I decided to split. And we had a partnership agreement that I couldn't open up within 5 miles because of competition. And I realized shortly after 6 months of opening, there really was no competition. And this isn't arrogance. This is saying that I had my own niche. I specialize in shoulders, knees, backs. At least I wanted to, and I do now. And I treat one-on-one, 1 hour. I'm in Fort Greene, so I don't see any other therapist duplicating my specific model and niche. There are other practitioners who have one-hour sessions one-on-one. But my clientele, my culture, it's very specific to Move Evolution. I say that because I throw out a very small net. So I have a niche practice. So I have a niche community. There's enough to go around. That's why I'm saying physical therapists are greedy. They try to get everything. So move forward 8 years. And now I'm starting this new project. It's called the, I know you can't see this because this is a podcast. It's called the Black in Brooklyn board game. It looks like a bingo board. And if I find another Black owned Brooklyn based, business that focuses on health, wellness, nutrition, I want to interview them. I want to put them on this board. I want to put them on my website. My intention for the end of the year, by the end of the year, is to have this entire board filled up. And my overall intention is to promote, network, and share. So people on the board can share information. Hey, I don't do acupuncture. Hey, I know you're a great acupuncturist. Please, I have a client with lower back. Hey, you have a gourmet pizza place that has vegan food. I want to send people there. We can visit, use their services. We can write reviews about their services. And again, we can refer back and forth. This all being said, Quetzi, my super sleuth office assistant, she found a Black physical therapist, female Black physical therapist who owns her own business less than, I'd say less than 3 minutes away from Move Evolution. Her name is Dr. Principal Susie. principal. And I did not know she existed. I don't think she knew I existed. And I think that's pretty sad. So the subtopic to this main theme of physical therapists are greedy, subtopic is, why don't we know we exist? So with that being said, Miss Dr. Principal, welcome to the Move, Heal, and Evolve, the Heal, Move, and Evolve podcast. Please introduce yourself. Tell people who you are, what you do, who you serve.
Bingo. Hi, Richard. My name is Dr. Susan Leisha Principal. Very long name. Let's start from scratch. I'm from New York originally. I grew up on Long Island. I went to Stony Brook University undergrad, went to NYT for my doctoral degree for physical therapy. Soon after, I worked actually at Presbyterian for a stint, and then realized I had a passion for outpatient orthopedics, and that kind of led me to traveling as a therapist for another stint, which landed me in Maryland. So I was in Maryland for about 8 years of said practice, in which I was able to work in a very large clinic, actually attached to within the same suite of Johns Hopkins Orthopedics. So I was able to kind of walk across and talk to whomever I wanted, which was great. And really leverage the relationship between therapist and doctor, because I noticed that that didn't necessarily exist. In addition to that, I realized that as a Black therapist, there's not a lot of us running in these streets. Ironically so, within a couple of months, another Black therapist, female, actually was hired as well. So there were two of us in the clinic, which is rare. She specialized in pelvic was her specialty, but still of a clinic of 10, of about 10 therapists to have two Black female therapists, which they would always get us confused, which is funny because I had dreadlocks. She did not like, no, I'm Suze. She's Julie, you know, so there. And then just trying to stand out, I think, within the community, because unfortunately, when I worked upstate as a traveling therapist, what's known of us, you know, what people see on television is that Blacks are seen a certain way. We're seen as, we speak a certain way, we speak with a certain jargon, we don't necessarily speak intellectually. So to find that and to hear that coming from someone and then a woman sometimes can be a little bit shocking, to say the least. So I really put a good foot effort just trying to, you know, just trying to give us a better name, because I think in these streets, unfortunately, as Blacks, we don't necessarily get that. So I was able to leverage it enough where by the time I left, a lot of the surgeons were like, I need you to start a practice and I need you to start it now, which was kind of what I needed in terms of confidence. However, I didn't start it, obviously, because that was back in 2009 or 10. I ended up moving, managed a bunch of clinics in Maryland and moved back to the Northeast. I actually live in New Jersey and I work for a larger practice who shall remain nameless.
I know them all. You can.
Sorry, nameless, who I currently am employed with. However, with the host, same issue in mind. Is this our non-compete, right? So there again, come my feet and my hands are tied in terms of where I can treat, and or if I wanted to have my vision and my goal and my dream of being a practice for myself, because just being tired, for lack of a better term, I'm just working for people, right? And then just realizing like, yeah, you know, we're being hustled. And, you know, unfortunately, as Black therapists, there's a different air. It's almost like it's who you, I don't want to say the adage, but it's who you know and who you blow. But unfortunately, it's true. You know, I found that.
And I've never heard that term.
What the lady I work with says it all the time, and I'm like, you know what?
I don't think I can use that sentence.
I don't think you can. But it is really who you know, and sometimes how you know, and how they, you know. I feel like particularly for me and where I work and worked and so on and so forth, because I don't have children, I'm not married. You know, it's like, okay, well, we can make you work a ton of hours, and we can make you do this, and we'll put you here. Matter of fact, you work these two clinics and you do this and you do that. And matter of fact, we're not going to give you a technician. You'll just handle it by yourself because you can, you're strong, right? So, you know, in that sense, it just became more and more frustrating. And I think the creator, knowing me, was like, I think it's time. And that led me actually to start my own practice in Brooklyn, in which I am like literally a stone's throw away from Move Evolution, and start that in 2020. It's just a whole bunch of circumstances that led me there, but let's just say I'm there now, and that kind of led to where I am now. So that's my brief history.
As far as the stigma, the stereotypes of what people see as far as Black female physical therapists. What was the biggest stereotype you encountered, and were busting some of these stereotypes, was that incentive to go out on your own? Was that, or was the incentive just, I can't work for other idiots? Two-part question.
The latter. The first, I think, Richard, I think, what was the first part of the question? I think the stigma attached to us. I think two perspectives. I'll take it because there's a patient perspective, and then there's the practitioner that's sending to us, right? So I think from the doctor perspective, because I was able to create those relationships on my own. Because without that, I think that really made a difference, really getting in and saying, hi, my name is Suze. This is what I do. I'm good at what I do, you know, and really being confident about that so that they can send, hey, if I kill them, don't send anymore. If they're alive,
that's
send
the
more.
Protocol.
Send more, you know, and then using the patients to leverage it. Like, hey, listen, if you really liked your experience, you felt like you had a professional experience, you felt like you had you feel like you're better, you're attaining the goals that you walked in with, I just ask that you go back to said doctor and tell them how you felt and tell them, you know, that you really enjoyed your experience and he'll send more. And realistically, sometimes just walking in and saying, hey, listen, doctor such and such, send me more patients, please. You know, just being upfront. And I think them seeing the professionalism and seeing, listen, she knows what she's doing. You know, I think once you crack that code of getting in the door and saying, hey, listen, this is just who I am. I think that from a physician perspective is the first one. I don't think I had a lot of like, oh no, you know, she's whatever. More of, are you professional? Can you treat my patients? Can you, cause at the end of the day, they do the surgeries, we take the baton and we take them to the finish line. From the patient perspective, a little different, because now the doctor is writing my name on a piece of paper and saying, see Suze. Well, my name is Suze. But when you see it, it says, maybe people think Susie.
Sorry about that.
It's fine. It's Suze Alicia. It's all right. It happens. But, you know, they will, hi, I'm here to see Susie. And then you're like, okay. And I lived in Maryland. And where I lived and worked in Maryland was a little mixed. So, they, you know, and now I pull back the shade and it's a Black woman. And they're like, oh, but they said it was. And then they begin to question, you know, did you go to school? And, you know, the thing that frustrated me more was, did you go to school? Like, you get all the questions. When they see another therapist of a different race, they don't get all the questions. They just run in there and they treat me. My neck is fractured. I don't care. Do what you do. But then I noticed with us, it's me specifically, where did you go to school? Tell me about your experience. And I'm like, oh, you want to know? Are you sure you want to know? And then I unload and no. You told me just, no, you asked me a question. I want to answer that question because you're questioning my experience level. And I find that as therapists of color, we're constantly questioned as to the validity of our degrees. Is it, you know, where did we go to school? And I feel like there's a measure of, I need to have a whole bunch underneath me to support, you know, these questions that are coming my way. So did I answer your question?
You didn't. It's okay. Funny because I was originally, when I first started, I did encounter that a few times. People would question me. Luckily I'm pretty arrogant, so my my confidence kind of broke through a little bit, but I'm only kidding. But as far as I want to go back to a little bit of clients can be a little bit of suspicious or hesitant. I'm going back to the first day I met you a few weeks ago, and folks, I'm telling you, we were trying to contact Dr. Principal through email, text, phone, carrier pigeon, telegraph, smoke signals. And when we first met a few weeks ago, and I asked her, what was the issue? What was the hesitancy? And please tell the listeners why. Yes, please. And I found this interesting, but I understood. I thought that was the issue.
Honest. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think that within the profession period, unless you have a connection with somebody, it's like, okay, cool, this person's calling me. I think when, you know, like he said, he tried every means by which existed, mail, FedEx, Amazon Prime. I mean, he tried his best to reach me. And I think for me, you rarely do find physical people within the same profession that you do not know that are really trying to connect with you and to figure out who you are, because there's always a sense of suspicion. Okay, what do you want? What are you looking for? Like, I'm not quite sure, of uncertainty really, because you just, you know, unfortunately we're led to almost question. And I think when you're of color, it's almost like the stakes are a little bit higher. Like, okay, well, I've gotten to this point. What does this person want? I need to really make sure before, you know, I let them in. So, you know, I think it was that. And, you know, quite honestly, when we got together, I was like, listen, I'll be honest and tell you, I was a little bit, you know, suspicious because I'm like, who? I've never seen that before because it's not something you encounter all the time. And to be honest with you, Richard, it was very genuine. And I do appreciate it.
Isn't that sad that it's a deeper suspicion within our culture? And that's what I'm trying to reverse by doing this Black Business Board. But it's sad. And even when we've had house issues, we wanted to keep things, you know, we wanted to hire other Black contractors. But sometimes that doesn't matter. We got screwed over by Black White. So, but back to the main issue is amongst ourselves. And I try to reach out as much as I can. And I get the same response, like, who are you? Or they don't respond. Like, I almost have to give a little bit more to show them my intentions are genuine and altruistic, but it takes a while to break that door down, you know.
It does because unfortunately it's almost a feeling like I've you've gotten yourself to this point, man. I've gotten up to here. Like, what are you?
Yeah, what else can I do?
It's gotta do be something else.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Warrior.
Did you just say Warriors?
I did.
That's one of my favorite movies. If I had another if I had two other bottles, I'd click them together. You know what? There's only a yes. Cyrus, man, he killed him. Cyrus. You know, there are only a few organizations out there that actually promote or try to bring folks together. The National Association of Black Physical Therapists. I just found another one today, Physical Therapist of Color. There's a business, Black business on Instagram. I forget what the exact title is. It's called the Brooklyn Business Pages, whatever. There are not too many out there. And it's kind of sad. So
there's one that a couple of friends started, actually. It's for women. I'd have to look on Instagram really quickly, but it's okay. She started, two friends of mine started a group for women, like a women, female, Black female women, in response to everything that was going on as of probably in the last like 6 months.
I think I've seen it. It's like, it has the terms or the title of the words Black physical therapy, female Black physical therapist, a Black girl physical therapy, something like that.
If it's if one of the therapists is Joanne Bovell or Joanne Michelle, I went to school with her. And she's actually, she's from New York, but she's situated now in Atlanta, but she's actually licensed also still in, she's the pelvic, she does pelvic. I can tell you what her Instagram is, but she's out of Georgia, but she's actually still licensed in New York as well. And then the other young lady, I can't think of exactly where she loves stuff like this too.
I put the podcast out, I'll send her the ad for the physical therapist also. We are looking for a physical therapist, by the way, folks. Today is what's today? The 9th, the 7th, 11th. The 12th, the 11th? 11th. It's the 11th. It's April, it's May 11th. So we are Move Evolutions looking for a full-time physical therapist. Back to the podcast. I want to ask you, and this is a multi-layered question. Your biggest hurdles opening up your own practice, being an entrepreneur, as a physical therapist, as a Black physical therapist, and as a female Black physical therapist. If they're all the same answer, they're all the same answer, but I highly doubt it.
Okay. Hurdles. There you go. I think hurdles. Okay. As an umbrella, I think in terms of being a physical therapist and a woman of color, I think imposter syndrome, is that something I can use?
Please explain.
I think when we look at ourselves and there's a grouping of us and we've got training from here till as far as the eye can see, I mean, we're good. Like, you know, and that's, I think, part of the confidence thing is like, you know we're good when you stack us up against others, you know what I'm saying? But I think when the brass tacks comes together, we lack that bit of confidence and that bit of like, maybe I need to take another course. Maybe I need to, am I really? And then, you know, that kind of doesn't lead you to be like, let me go start my business. You know what I'm saying? And like I mentioned, when I was in Maryland, I was probably out 8, 9, 10, 11, maybe 4 or 5 years. And the surgeons were like, prime example as to what I'm thinking of. I would walk. So this is Johns Hopkins. You know, you're walking in, and I knew the guy, the sportsman guys, pretty well. Two of which, you know, I would just walk in and kind of schmooze, and they would lead me into the office, and they'd be like, "All right, this is Dr. Principal. She's a physical therapist," and I would do their assessment. I'm like, "Sir, you're the surgeon. Can you do the assessment, please?" They're like, "See what you see." So that, you know, that confidence, right? But then it came the other way, it was like, I don't know if I could start this practice. Meanwhile, this big wig surgeon is trusting me with his vision. So I feel like as a whole, and it's what I've heard from other therapists, where it's like, well, I'm social media. I don't know if I can put stuff out there. I don't know if, you know, I have enough information. I don't know if I'm like, but you have, we're skilled. So that's a hurdle in terms of like the mental psychological hurdle of, I want to start this practice. You kind of feel like maybe you don't have it, but you do, you know what I'm saying? We've been out for years. So it's like, how much more can one learn, you know, in terms of so that's probably as a Black female physical, I think it's that. Cause then you look at your counterparts and you're like, man, like they're killing it. Yeah. I think what kind of threw me over the edge was a couple of things. And I think one of them was seeing my white counterparts that had left schooling, that were out maybe 2-3 years and started successful practices, thinking like, why the heck can I do this? I've been out since 2000 and whatever, you know, like I've got more than 14, 15 years of experience. And meanwhile, such and such has been out 3 years and has a growing practice. You know what I'm saying? So what's the difference? I think, you know, I think we can do this. Let's do this. So I think that was another hurdle for me. Financially, I think is another piece. I think as Black women, oftentimes, and then we're not married. So we're single. We are, you know, one income, you know, so I think another hurdle is financial, right? So, you know, to have another person and another income coming in, you know, to help you start this practice is a lot. And I'll be honest, my faith is pretty much a main staple for me. And, you know, I feel like nothing, if it wasn't for God, because a lot of my patient income helped to support my rent, help to support my purchase, help to support, because at the end of the day, this isn't full-time for me. I only have one income. So how do you go from this full-time job to now you're starting this practice on the side? Something's gotta even out. And for me, it was that I was getting clients and the revenue I was receiving from the clients was enough such that I could pay the rent and I could buy my equipment and buy the little things that I needed here and there. So I think financially that was another hurdle, because a lot of us are, you know, single and so on and so forth. They don't have that second income role. And then you can just lean back like, oh, I'm gonna just leave this job and let's give this a try. We don't have that option. So I find that to be another hurdle for the women that I've spoken to. So
when, as far as your church and your, how much of it, when did you make that leap of faith, and how much was church or God on your side? Or did you say, you know what, God, I'm ready to jump. I'm ready to leap off that ledge. What was that feeling like? What was the communication like with God? What was that moment?
Jumping off let me stop. I'm going for it, Jesus.
Wait, I'm not ready. Don't jump.
Lord, I'm going. That's all I got. You know, it's been an interesting sorry. I can be silly when I want to be.
Silly is good.
It's been an interesting journey, I think. It's good that I could turn it off. But it's been an interesting journey in that, the story is that I had, or the testimony, however you want to put it, I had typed out a business, of like real, like a business plan about 2008-ish, roughly. And I would have it on I still have the old laptop, and I wrote it on there. And somebody sat with one guy that was like a tech for Hopkins, was like, I need you to do a business plan. All right, whatever, I'll do it. But still somewhere deep down, I wanted to, but didn't really have the chutzpah to really go and do it. So I had the business plan, and I was like, it's just gonna sit there. Every year I would pop open this laptop, and looking at me in this file is this business plan. And finally, you know, it just kind of took it over the edge, where I think it was, like I said, you know, you go online, you go on Instagram, you're like, how long has this person been in practice? They just got out of school in 2010.
Yeah.
They have a whole full-blown business in 2012. No. So I think that was the thing that kind of
Was that Nigerian? No. Or Haitian? No. Or was that Haitian?
No. I know. Patients don't know I in front of it. I know. You know, and I think that was the thing. It was just like, okay, like, come on, Suze. So I think that was the thing that kind of pushed it. But then, you know, a couple of other factors, like it wasn't more like, all right, Lord, let me pray on this. Okay, Jesus, well, I want to start my practice. It was always kind of a desire to want to do something. And I think the stars aligned and COVID came and kind of just like, ironically, that's the thing that kind of pushed it over the edge. Cause you wouldn't have thought that a pandemic would, I keep saying that who would have thought I would have started a business during the pandemic? I didn't. Because I was trying to start it years before, but there were just some obstacles. New York licensure. I was licensed in New York. The license lapsed. So you need like a Jesus amount of continuing education. So I had to start from scratch. Like it was just a lot of like hurdles and things that I needed to get through, getting the license, getting the business licenses. But funny enough, it almost sped through when COVID came, which is crazy. And then it's just been less of just me really just taking my hands off of it and just like, okay, God, well, you got this. And it's just been one thing after the other that's kind of just been happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, Lord, that was cool. Like, it just happens. And you're like, what was that? Okay, we'll go with it.
I actually give thanks every day because I know a lot of other physical therapists or physical therapy outfits that went out of business during COVID. Move Evolution didn't. We actually grew. I don't give thanks. I'm not going to ask why. I'm just going to say, why not? But yeah. You mentioned something earlier about confidence, tooth and value. School does not teach us to value ourselves as physical therapists. They say, we know this, we know that. They don't teach us the value in what we do, and they don't teach us how to market ourselves or to promote ourselves. And you also said something about looking at other clinicians. How do they do this so quickly? Instagram. I learned early from a mentor, don't try to compare yourself or emulate, just see how they got there. You know, see the road. It may not be your road, and they may not be happy. They may not have learned. They may be a PT that making money, but they don't know shit about PT. They're not doing what they want to do. So, you see how they got that light. You sort of don't mimic it. You get my idea. We also have Caribbean parents. I have Jamaican, Cuban, my grandmom's Cuban, my parents are Jamaican. You're Haitian, yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Caribbean parents don't, old school, they don't really push for entrepreneurship. And they say, you know, learn computers or be a nurse, you know?
Yeah.
So as much as they are proud of me and my mom's proud of me, they, you know, no one really pushed me to do this. How are your parents as far as you branching out on your own or your family in general?
Do you mind if I go back to the marketing piece really quickly?
No, not at all.
All right. So the marketing is interesting. And it goes once again into the color thing, which is pretty cool. Or not cool, but a point of to be noted. So once again, in Maryland. And I have a clinic. And in that sense, you know, unfortunately, we were stripped of our marketing representative, which left a lot of the directors having to market their own clinics. Now, they don't teach us this in school. They don't teach you. That's one thing I think about the chiropractors. They get all the, you know, all the books and all the codes and the, you know, the golden key. We don't get any of that. So it's like, okay, how the hell do I market this clinic? Jesus, I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, I learned very quickly that I think that was also the confidence piece. Like, I've got to get people in this door and I have to walk in this office and I've got to give off something. So I learned how to use my personality, use what I had to kind of my strengths in that sense to get people in. Like, hey, you know, the blonde that was here, I'm going to be her. So anytime you see me, you know, I'm the blonde. Let's
you didn't wear that. The wig, you know? Did you?
I didn't. Okay. But, you know, it got me to the front desk manager who got me to the referral coordinator who got me to the doctor in the back. So I think, you know, that experience, and it was hard because, like I said, a lot of these offices, you walk in the door and they're like, what do you, you know, they don't know, you know, they don't see us. There's not a lot of us represented. So now you have a therapist, you know, you come out of school with this big designation now, doctor such and such, and now you're a physical therapist. And they're like, what do you want? Like, what can we do for you? So I think very, very quickly I had to learn how to pick that up. If not, I would sink. And then in terms of my own business, same thing applied. I think I just took all of the things I learned from before, from being on my own marketing, and just applied it to now. Like, you've got to be your own cheerleader. Like, if you're in solo practice, like the joke I have with a friend is like, I am the business. I am the marketing. I am the marketing team. I'm the marketing department. I'm human resources. So you've got to kind of learn how to almost self-promote for yourself. So that was interesting. But that, yeah, that kind of led into, you know, Instagram and things like that. And what was your other question? Caribbean parents.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, my parents came here in the 60s. So they were teenagers when they came here. My mother went to Prospect when it was all girls. My dad went to Jefferson. And my dad is a doctor by profession, but did interventional radiology at, where did he work? St. Luke's. And mom ended up being a nurse practitioner and doing home care. So always in the medical field. And if anything, at one point, like you said, oh, be a nurse. Ironically, I thought of that. Oh, all Haitians are nurses. They make great nurses. We're going to take care of you.
Why you?
Come take your medication. But, we make great, unfortunately, home health aid. That's just what we're in the healthcare industry. I mean, if you kind of look through it, you see a lot of Caribbean represented within there.
Yes.
And I thought that was my destiny. And I thought, oh, well, maybe this is what, I'm either going to be a doctor or a nurse, maybe a physician's assistant. And my mom actually pulled me to the side and was like, I need you to be your own person. I don't need someone over you. She's like, I'm supervised and I don't care for it. I need
That's
you to
so find rare.
It. It's very like, when I tell you the stars were like, choo, 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 choo. Because she was just like, I need you to, you can be a physician's assistant, but no, there's going to be a doctor over you. You can be a nurse, but understand there's going to be this above you. You can be this, but there's going to be someone above you. So I need you to begin to set your sights a little bit different. And she actually set me up with, when I tell you my life, it's crazy. She set me up with a PT she knew that gave me my volunteer hours. And then that led me into PT school. And the guy that helped me with my volunteer hours, ironically, went to school with the guy that I did my thing with. So it was just like, hey. But yeah, they were very much so like, we need you to be your own person. So in terms of starting the business, granted, they never pushed back and said no. If anything, they were trying to give me kind of tips and trying to lead me. Because remember, I told you, my uncle is in the neighborhood there as well. So I have, on my mom's side, there's a bunch of people in business for themselves, either be mechanics or whatever. So I have that to look at on my mom's side specifically. If anything, more so from other people within the profession that were like, you sure you want to start a business? Like, it's kind of tough. Versus my family. I think my immediate family was like, we need you to start a business.
You got to avoid the haters, just as you were talking about Instagram. Am I capable or qualified enough to put out an Instagram post? I've had that issue with a PT and I was asking her to do that. And she said, well, I'm not ready. There's people going to challenge me. Oh, yeah. You're not writing for them. You're not writing to them. You're writing a fourth grade level. People just want quick information. There are always going to be haters. Just make sure you know your shit. Don't just put BS out there and you're going to be fine. Yep. If people comment, just here's your rationale. Don't worry about them.
Yep. But that's the hard part because I think, it's comparison, right? I think we're led to compare. This person has 10,000 followers. Like, Lord, how did he get 10,000? I got one. What am I going to do? They must know more because they have more people. No, they just may just have that thing that people are gravitating toward.
Exactly.
Not that they know more. You know what I'm saying? I think that's the hesitancy for a lot of us is like, man, like, I don't know if I'm really an authority on this topic. Listen, you went to school.
unless you're an idiot, I'm going to write a post on what I didn't learn in the school.
Something.
And you talked about amount of hits or likes or followers. One, there are a lot of people. What's the return on investment? Wow, I have 10,000 followers. How many visits have I gotten from that?
The
other is there are people, and I want to ask you about your bodybuilding or your bikini. Bodybuilding.
Bikini competitor.
Guarantee, if you just put pictures of you, not I have no idea what you look like out of nice logo, by the way, and your t-shirt. I have no idea what you look like. There are women who just go out there, they work out, they're in pretty good shape, and they just post themselves and they have 30,000, 40,000 followers. Do they have any talent? No, but people want to see them. I wouldn't worry so much about how many followers other people have. Are you putting out good content? And is there a good return on investment? Are you getting people to go onto your website? Are people calling you?
And I think it's interesting you say that, because I listened to Eric Thomas. He's a motivational speaker, and he has a podcast I follow. And ironically, and this is kind of where my head has been, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, social media is social media, right? And it's, for some odd reason, it's free. Why is it free? They're making money off of you. Yeah. Now, how do you yourself make money off of this? You know what I'm saying? So it's a vehicle. So how are you using it? Like you said, are you just posting really cute pictures of yourself? And what's the return on investment of that cute picture that's out there in outer space? So it's a matter of using it to, like you said, to get something back from it, like using it as a vehicle that it's for. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever it is, and trying to say, okay, on this post, what are your intentions? I'm posting this for the purpose of what? Information. Okay, great. I'm posting this for the purpose of what? So that, hey, call me if you need help. This is my number. This is my da-da-da-da-da. How are you using your social media? And like you said, said person could have 400,000 followers, but how many patients are they getting from that? And or how many visits are they getting from that as well?
And I do see most posts are involve a lot of ego. You have to remove ego from the equation, or you're just writing for yourself. It's like a fictional writer. You know what? I'm not writing because I just want to put this out. It's sort of a catharsis. I'm writing because I want to sort of impress people or tell people how smart I am. So,
but that's, I think, where we're led to do, because I think when you have this, I think that's the one mistake I can say in the beginning. A friend of mine, you know, was telling me, like, listen, you're giving too much. And in the giving, it's okay. What do you like? You have all this medical jargon. Like, nobody understands. Like you said, present it on the 4th grade level. Give them what they need. Listen, your shoulder hurts. Okay, shoulder pain is caused by this. This is how you can make it better. Matter of fact, let me help you. And just leave it there. It's less about all of this medical information and jargon that I know, because I'm like, I went to school. Like, at the end of the day, nobody cares.
Just like on the I learned early on the About Us page or your bio, don't put your resume or what you know. Like, I like shoulders. I like ACLs. I can help your ACL. I can help you get back to running. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know?
Yeah.
People overwrite their bias. Oh,
they do.
I want to go back to your bodybuilding. Tell people, please. Found an interesting story, how you started, how you felt during your competition, and also how you bring this back into the studio. Oh, show me a bicep pose, please. Double bicep. People can't see this.
I don't double bi, but it's all right.
My bikini
poses are a little bit different. It's more of a, so it's a culture. And it's ironic because I just posted something on that today on my personal page, because I have a personal and have a business. And the irony of that is that I treated his name is Max Charles, he's Haitian actually. I literally had my business maybe a couple of weeks, barely had a tax ID number. And he was like, I need help. And I was like, as my first patient, who was he's huge. Like, he's a literally bodybuilder. So he's like however much muscle. And you know, I'm 5'1". At the time I was weighing 115 pounds. My mother was like, what are you gonna do with that? I don't know. But he actually drew people to my personal page. And then now I've had to funnel people to my business page. So that's been interesting. But nice. Back to your original question. So I treating for forever, you know, as therapists, obviously we know about weightlifting. We get the occasional patient that comes through, you know, I find it interesting now because I'm looking at it from a different set of lenses, because now I actually, you know, I'm in the culture a little bit more. So I started weightlifting in the end of 2018. So do the math. I've always kind of been into wellness. I've always been to the gym. I've kept a measure of, you know, I like to go to the gym, you know, had an idea of things. And because of the knowledge, therefore, because of what we do, somewhat of a knowledge, but not, this took it over to the edge because it's extreme.
We don't know your age, by the way. So you may, if you want to tell people your age or when you started, it doesn't matter. People will figure it out.
Okay. So I started at the tender age of 39. So I am actually 41. Which is actually, you know, it's not, you know, at the end of the day, it's not old within the field, but then again, it's, you know, a lot of people within the industry are bikini competitors specifically are typically, it's a bucket list thing, you know, miss such and such, you know, I'm 22 and I just got out of school. I want to be a bikini competitor. It's pretty...
I started early. I started bikini modeling early.
You did?
I got banned after the first month. They said I can't have testicles if I want.
Right.
So, yeah.
can't quite be in that company.
No.
Didn't work out for you, did it?
Nope.
But a friend of mine actually, so there's different, so for those listeners who don't really know, there's different divisions. So you start a bikini as you want to be toned, you're working, yeah, muscle density, like your deltoids, I've got to have some definition, your biceps, your triceps, but not really, you're not that dense. So you're not really looking at like someone who's really kind of a thick bodybuilder. If you look at the back will have some measure of definition to it, but it's not a wide back. You're doing lat pulls, but not really that, you know, defined. Your waist is really tiny. Your abs are not defined, but they're small. So this is all involved in the conditioning. It's more of a conditioning thing when it comes down to bikini. You lift heavy, but not that heavy. You're doing more compound movements, not so much isolated, because you don't want the quads popping out so much where you see like all of them. You want to see just like the glutes. Glutes are big. Obviously, you know,
thank goodness
you got to do some posing. I had to fight against my genetics with that one, but I had to fight hard. But it's interesting what you can actually build. It's interesting, and you know, although at the outset it's like, oh man, this person is really just taking pictures all the time, and man, they must be conceited. It's less a conceit thing rather than you're trying to build proportion. So for anybody who's ever seen anyone online that's like always taking pictures of themselves or videos, it's more about finding perfection and proportion, which can also go to the extreme. So you want the shoulders to match the hips to match, like you have to have the hourglass figure, and you're always trying by virtue of hypertrophy and just lifting heavy to gain that, and with food and such to go there with it. So a friend of mine exposed me, and she was the next level up. So she was she needed to be a bit bigger than I did. And she pulled me into the sport. My first competition was in June. My second was my second one was a week later. My third one was at the end of December. My fourth one was actually within COVID. So I did one in September, yes. And all these are NPC or National Physique Committee, because you can be natural or you can do what I did was in the NPC, which is a more renowned that I think of. Sorry if I offend anybody out there, but you get the Mr. Olympias, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, like that, you know, that committee that you're a part of, like that grouping of people. And then my last competition was actually in November of 2020. Yes. So I got into it just as a, hey, do you think you could do this? And I could do that. And then, oh, I'm doing it. So, you know, for those that don't really know, it entails a lot. I was in the gym on average 12 times a week, morning and evening. So evening, double a sessions. Lot of cardio. Yeah, 2 days, which get fun. You know, so morning cardio, morning fasted cardio, evening cardio, and eating 5 to 6 meals a day of whatever, depending on what you're going for.
Did you ever have a hard time? You said you had to sort of limit your hypertrophy as far as your glutes, your quads. Do you ever say, well, I'm getting too big or too muscular, I need to calm it down? Do you have to taper, or were you always pretty much on point?
So I think where people get confused, I think, when they think of lift, like when you met, if you mention, so because people know what I do and I say lifting weights, oh no, I'm not trying to, and you're like, oh. So I always have to like reel people back. Like, I know, like, bodybuilding is extreme. There's like a small, minute percentage of the population that does it. And when you see somebody else that does it, you're like, yeah, she's doing it. Like, you can tell when you go to the gym, like, hey, like, it's almost like a head nod. Like, I see you. But, you know, in terms of the general population, you know, I think lifting, people think weightlifting and they think, oh gosh, I'm going to be big. But oftentimes at night, people realize like it's also factored in with what you're eating. So the protein you're taking in, the carbohydrates you're taking in, all that lends to the building of that muscle and the consistency by which. So if I'm working on this body, this particular group of muscles 3 days a week, yeah, you're going to notice some growth. If I'm only working on it twice, like how much growth do you think you're going to get? So my coach, actually, you do weekly check-ins. And then with the weekly check-ins, they kind of see, oh, okay, you're looking good here. You need to maybe work a little bit more there. But I didn't have a lot of muscle coming in. And I think this is the interesting thing too. You're almost dieted. I started at 140 pounds, but my proportions were different. To get my stage weight is what they would call. So what you see on stage is what they would call a quote unquote stage weight. And the stage weight is about 109, 110 pounds. So I'm pretty lean. So I'm down to just muscle at that point, which is pretty interesting because I've never, you know, you don't know what the body can do until you take it there. But you know, you almost, you diet down, but as you're dieting down, you're also kind of building muscle. So it's not like, oh my gosh, you're building too much muscle, particularly because I had just started, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Now that I've been in the game about, so I've been doing this now about a little over 2 years, now is where I can probably, you know, now I can kind of pick and choose, like, maybe I should back off of this and maybe I should do more of that. Because now, you know, my body's like, you don't really know how it takes to it until you start to do it. And you're like, man, my arms are just really big. Maybe I should pull back on these arm days.
Does that help alleviate some of the fears with your female clients? It's okay to strength train. It's okay to get under a squat rack. Just from seeing you and hearing. Okay.
I think so. I think seeing it and really it's education. I think it all boils down to education. Cause I think people see and they assume it's like, oh, you know, once I start doing these squats, my behind is going to be big. Or once I start doing these leg raises, my quads are going to be huge. No, it takes time. Like just to get to where I am now, it took time. And, you know, even in diet, you know, so all of that comes together somewhere in the middle into how your physique looks. And I think it's the education on that. I think that's the biggest piece. But it has changed my practice in the sense of, I mean, obviously it's widened who I can see because I understand the life. Cause like, we're not going to stop. Like nothing's going to stop us. Little knee pain, we'll work around it. Little shoulder pain, I'll be all right.
I don't have time for pain.
You don't. Like I broke a toe. I dropped a 10-pound weight on my toe.
Lovely.
And I'm surprised I didn't take out all the toes. But I broke it and I had the show coming up in 3 months. And I'm like, okay, so I worked this much. Am I going to stop? And I had people like, maybe you should stop. And you're like, you know what it took to get to this point? Nah, we ain't stopping. So, you know, I just worked some non-weight bearing things or, you know, lunges and things. Like I had to, the therapist in me knew to kind of modify, like, okay, I can't quite lunge because my toe is broken. So maybe if I, you know, do a little modified version of a Bulgarian squat, I can get the same thing out of it. Or
which toe
do
was
a wider stance. It was my pinky toe.
Could be worse. Could have been your big toe.
Yeah. The pinky toe, ironically, it plays a pretty decent part in lunging and so on and so forth. So I kind of had to work around it, like wide squatting, you know, bringing my feet a little bit more out in terms of external rotation so I'm not having so much weight there, and stair climbing versus walking on the treadmill and just having to modify. But it's changed the way I practice.
So I understand. I fractured each and every one of them.
Okay. So you know. I got to tell you.
And I still worked out my doctor. Long story short is I had a surgery. I was in my boot. My doctor says, just be careful on it. I was at work. Someone called. I had a delivery. I went running outside 3 blocks of delivery. Halfway there, I hit click, click, click. Like, what the hell is that? And I called my doctor. I go, what happened? He goes, you just fractured my frac. You just refractured your foot. It hadn't healed yet.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Pelvic floor. This is huge because there are not too many pelvic floor specialists in Brooklyn, New York. I know one in Brooklyn, maybe one and two in the city. And when I spoke to you, said you had an interest. You do specialize. You have an interest in pelvic floor. You want to get deeper into it. No pun intended. Tell us about your... I'm sorry. Thank you, folks. Tell us about your passion for pelvic floor or your interest in pelvic floor dysfunction.
More an interest. Probably, like I mentioned, myself and another therapist, the one I know all of the female therapists I know that are Black all have some measure of specialty in pelvic floor. So we all are, three of us are board certified in orthopedics. One has her fellowship training and the one in Georgia as well. So pretty much all the women I know. And more the interest, I think, in the beginning, because I'm so ortho, it was like, I don't know if I want to get in there like that.
Yeah.
But then as time goes on, you realize how much it does play a part into, as you get older, in terms of, you know, stress incontinence, just incontinence period with people, in terms of pain, painful sex that people are having, you know, the mother that has the kid, you know, and now has pelvic pain or is having pain because of, you know, the ischial tube, mm-hmm. just all of that's involved with it. Vastus recti, that plays a big part in terms of abdominal strength and the patient that comes in at post baby. So I just kept encountering it in little ways here, there, and everywhere. And I thought, you know what? I think this is just something that I need to get into. And then as well, considering within our community, there's not a lot of us that do it. There's not a lot of education around it. And, you know, a lot of the OBGYNs are kind of looking for people that do it and just can't find it.
Right.
And then more specifically, like you mentioned, we're not represented, I think, period, within rehab to a certain degree. And then when you kind of go a little deeper in terms of that specialty, we're not represented as well. So, and with my ortho background, it actually does set me up to be a pretty decent pelvic floor therapist. So yeah, and just the experience related to just understanding the SI joint and, you know, and all that stuff. So it's just another something that I feel like I can help the community and just help women, period. Another niche.
And as far as your referral system, you were mentioning you have a tight community in Maryland, Black female physical therapists. Are you able to refer, network, talk to each other, ask questions about pelvic floor? Do you still, you know, nerd out?
Oh, yeah. We'll throw research out. So unfortunately, with the way healthcare is, said listeners, healthcare has changed. And unfortunately, you know, reimbursement is just sucky. Deductibles are super high, you know, so a lot of people don't have the amount of time. So when the insurance company's staring at you and they're like, you got 4 visits to make this happen, you're like, how the hell? So something you have to network to be like, listen, how did you do this? And, you know, to know like the best practices by which, yeah, there's research. But yes. Then again, there's, listen, I did it this way. And what are the best practices that got you there that quick? And a lot of clinics are finding out of state where they're not even treating anymore. Like, so to be honest with you, to find a physical therapist that's willing to spend an hour with you and that's willing to put their hands on you and willing to see you through is rare, because you're not getting that anymore. You're getting a drop off. And unfortunately, you're getting 3 sessions and a home exercise program. That's just where this is the state of the union. This is where we are.
That's why when you specialize, since you are a rarity, you know, I'm not telling you what to do, but it's going to be a cash based practice. You know, I know folks that in New York, they charge $250 to $300 visit, and people will pay it because, you know, I have a pelvic floor issue. And you and I know pelvic floor can manifest itself as lower back pain, GI pain, even respiratory issues can be caused by pelvic floor dysfunction. I think it's a necessity. I don't treat it. I'm aware of it. And I need to know that I can send this person to you. And it's sad because, again, there's a big disconnect. Why didn't I know you existed? You know, I've had people, you know, any pelvic floor. I just sent someone to you 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure if she called you, but I felt great knowing you're on my referral list, that I know you, I've spoken to you, and you care about the clients, you know what you're doing. But what do you feel being in Brooklyn, even though you have that close-knit community, what's the biggest disconnect? What do you think we don't communicate with one another or share? Or as you re-emphasized, I have a question about pelvic floor issues. Can you help me out? Can we narrow it out about each other, about it? What do you think the issue is?
And within practitioners or just period within the community itself?
Practitioners, physical therapists.
I think in terms of a lot of the networking, networking is more so like you did, kind of like, hey, Quetzi found you and we want to da 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 da, right? Beyond finding people, I find social media is probably the next outfit available. But once again, back to the original point, if you're not putting yourself out there to say, hey, listen, I am a physical therapist, I am a Black female physical therapist, I am located here, this is what I do, how can we find each other? Because really, ultimately, the reason how I was found was because I put myself out there.
Yeah.
And as much as people don't, and I was talking to someone about that the other day, I said, I don't really, as much as I'm on social media, I don't necessarily care for it that much to understand that I could put this reel out and it's in South Africa by tonight. Like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Why you put that video out?
I saw you on that TV. You were doing that thing on what that is Facebook. That?
What do you
I
call
don't
that?
Know about that. That's not good. That's no good. But you know, you're putting yourself out. You're putting yourself out there, and I think for a lot of people, I think like I mentioned, it's the confidence to put yourself out there that just that That's step one. And then step two is, hey, listen, I saw somebody on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, that said they're whatever. And I was talking to somebody else about that too. And I said, you know, we're talking about like just professions, period, not just PT. As a community, we don't market ourselves at all. It's Joe Schmo that we know has three to six businesses in Bitcoin. It's, you don't realize that, you know, Richard has a PT business and he has a podcast because he didn't put it out there. So when you put it out there, then I can say, hey, I have an issue with, you know, my taxes. You're the tax man because I've seen you do taxes. Can you help me? So I think it's just putting yourself out there. And there could be more of us out here. Who knows? But nobody's putting their sons out there. And I think that's the limitation. It's the confidence, I think, to say, you know what, balls to the wall, I'm going to do it. Whatever happens, like you said, like when you called me, you were like, listen, I tout that I'm the Black physical therapist in Brooklyn. I was like, brother, you can be whoever you want to be.
Yes, folks, I have to say this. For 4 years, I've been toting that I was the only Black physical therapist owned his own practice, and then Kwetsi, my office manager, burst my bubble. I go, who is this woman? Now, part of me hoped you didn't call back because I didn't want to you know, strip myself of that moniker. But that's okay. I cannot. That's that. Yeah, maybe I will. Anyway.
Listen, you're Black male. Listen,
Black male.
The funny thing is my hashtag, I was like, nobody's using this one. So I'm going to run with this. I was like, the Brooklyn physical therapist. Nobody's
What's
using
your hashtag?
The Brooklyn physical therapist.
That's your hashtag?
That's my hashtag.
That's kind of general. Never
mind. It's general, isn't it?
I thought I was the first Black male to graduate from Simmons College. And I kept thinking about it. I graduated in, I'm going to date myself, 97. And I'm like, I've never seen any of the Black faces. I've seen some Black females. So I called 10 years later. And I called the physical therapy department. I said, I'm Richard Simmons. I'm an alum. Am I the first? And they go, huh. I mean, I think you are. They really had to think about it. Like, you don't know. You know, and that's kind of sad that I'm the first to go through. But anyways, I am no longer the only Black owner. Hey, please, what are your future intentions for your practice? And you don't have to mention who you work for, or I don't want to get you in trouble. But what are you looking to do over the next year?
I need to eat.
You need to eat. I'm so hungry.
Can I have some more, sir? May I have more? I'm going to be in the mall. So, excuse me, miss, can I do some gate training on you? Because I have no job.
a little kiosk.
Yep. Excuse me. Would you like to learn how to flat iron your hair and get some gate training? My ultimate. Sorry.
I like it.
The goal, you know, obviously the goal is to grow, right? To grow into however this thing takes on. And like you said, they're kind of stuck. There are people that are doing what they're doing. Yeah, they're in business, but they're not happy. And my ultimate goal is, yeah, I need to get away from what I'm doing. And I just want to be happy. I just want to treat people, you know, I want to see them achieve their goals. I want to see them, get their function. I just want to do my thing. Uninhibited. Just want to do my thing. But in terms of growth, you know, I'm looking, you know, so I can get to a place where, you know, I can really just treat comfortably 4 or 5 days a week. You know, one practice for now will do. If it grows to two, sure. But right now I just, you know, want to kind of grow that orthopedic practice. I love joint replacements. If you're getting something replaced, oh, I just dropped my AirPods. If you're getting something replaced, I love them. Knees, hips, ankle fractures, love those things. Shoulders, I love shoulders. Low back is just a staple for
all shoulders. Like labrum, rotator cuff,
labor repairs. Mm-hmm. Love those things. I'm getting a ton of them now as of recently. I'm like, what's going on in society? Or maybe they're just being found more now. But I love those as well. The body, you know, the bodybuilder, I found that because a lot of them, they're in what we would call prep. So in preparation for a show. Mm-hmm. For those that are in prep or know somebody that's in prep, you know, we're in the gym 12 times. So obviously that's a lot. That's like your car, right? It needs to be tires need to be rotated. Oil needs to be changed. So I do offer a package in there where they can come in and kind of get just like an assessment so we can just address some things so they can, like some body
that's
work done if they need body
very
work.
Cool. You specialize. I've never heard of a physical therapist that specializes in treating bodybuilders. That's a niche in itself. Or niche.
It is.
Or,
It is, and really, it's getting to those gyms and speaking with those people, because this is the season now. All the shows are happening now, and it's just getting out there and saying, "Hey, listen, you know, I have one competitor. Her name is Arlindina Ballin. She is phenomenal. She does, but she's a physique competitor. She's got a little bit more muscle bulk, and her coach is actually Max Charles as well. And you know, she's one of the clients that I treat." And yeah, it's been interesting because, like you said, like, you know, you're in the gym. Yeah, it's not a rehab specific goal that they have. Like, I can't reach more than I'm really not getting muscle activation in this lat because my shoulder is not moving within its full range of motion. So really just getting to the bottom of that, working that muscle, getting it activated again, and then just watching them.
I'll just do movie lines till you come back. Pulp Fiction lines, The Dark Knight.
Am I back?
Ah, there you go. Good.
There I go.
Yes. Okay.
What was I saying?
I won't do my Heath Ledger impression.
What was I saying about I don't remember. But what I was saying is that, you know,
Mark, trainer.
Yeah. So the goal. So basically, there. You know, we're in the gym. We're trying to, like I mentioned in the beginning, we're trying to achieve balance. So can't quite achieve balance if that shoulder is not necessarily firing the way it should because of an impingement issue, or, you know, because of, you know, maybe you've got like some underlying scoliosis and you're not necessarily getting that muscle firing across the board. So let's lengthen some things. Let's work on activation of some things. So it just gets interesting because you get to, it's not just you're working on one body part. You're trying to look at, like, you have to look at the gross. Like, let me see you do this. Like you said, let me see you do your double bicep. What does your double bicep look like? Little, you know, you're not getting as much hypertrophy on the right one. What's going on the right side? Let's figure this out. Let's do some body work. Go back to the gym, go back to your coach. How's it feel? How do you look? Yeah. Now that you're under the weight and then the weight is kind of tensioning it, what does it look like? Man, they're back. So that's pretty cool. Because you get a real, it's really like bodybuilding is cause and effect. You eat something, you look a certain way. You do something, you look a certain way. So it's pretty cool.
Don't tell me I had two brownies today for breakfast or after breakfast. So yeah, I feel really already crappy because
you
that
see
means
it.
I have to dance extra today just to burn it off.
It's a really cool science experiment because you're down, you're so lean that, you know, you eat a little bit of like a rice cake. You're like, ooh, look at that. Like even leading up to up to a show, like you're lean down, all of the carbs are taken, and then you slowly introduce them so that you can look a certain way on stage, bam. And then you eat whatever you want for about 24 hours and go back on what you do again.
I feel like that about steroids.
can you?
Actually, this is a true story. I did try them in high school for a while and they do work well. I was an idiot. I went to get bigger and stronger. I got bigger and stronger. I'm like, what am I spending all this money for? And, you know, and so I just stopped. But they're great.
They do work. Sponsored in part by
testosterone for a manly man. You have a workshop coming up possibly on headaches.
Yes. So I am currently working on a scientific course on headache for those that are suffering, that are looking how to kind of rule in and rule out red flags and just figure out some mobility activities that they can do safely at home. I am currently working on that. That should be released, God willing, within the month. First, mobility will be the first part and strengthening will be the second part of it. And if you're still there and struggling, come on in for a session and we can kind of get to the bottom of it, for lack of a better term.
Are you talking about any pain signs?
You said pain science?
Pain science, yes. Pain neuroscience in that course. We're going to keep it very simple and just talk about mobility and selective strengthening.
I'm keeping it simple only for the, just because this is for the general population. I trust me, I could have gone down a very rugged road. And I said, you know what, let me keep it simple as, listen, what in terms of cervicogenic headache, like what is it really? How do I self-diagnose it? What are the muscles that are contributing to it? Am I having some, you know, range of motion difficulties? Like just keeping it simple so that they can themselves say, listen, and or I'm having these red flags, I need to go see a neurologist, or I'm not having these red flags, press go and continue to the next part of the course and to the mobility assessment of it and to the exercise. So just keeping it very simple.
I'm going to tune in. I might show up as a heckler and disguise myself and ask you off the wall questions like, hey, I go to rock concerts and I bang my head and I get headaches and concussions, but then I smoke a lot of pot and it goes away. Is that good for my headaches? Anyways.
No.
So tell everyone how they can find you, your website, Instagram. I'll have all of this on the show notes of the podcast, but please, Dr. Principal, how could they find you?
How will?
Yes.
So my website is www.principalpt.com. That is my last name. It just worked out that way. Trust me, I did not want to do that.
It works. And remember, it's principal, like the principal is my pal, P-A-L, not P-L-E.
Yes. And the business is Principal Physical Therapy, PLLC. I'm located on 84 Lafayette Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. A stone's throw away from Move Evolution, literally. My email address, in case anybody wants it, is drprincipalpt@gmail.com. So it's drprincipalpt@gmail.com. Facebook is Principal Physical Therapy, in case you want to drop in there. Instagram is pretty interesting. It is Principal, once again, _PT. If you want to drop in there, and or my personal is Lioness, LIONEZZ, like Lion of Judah with 2 Z's at the end. I had locks.
Oh yeah, that's
over a decade. So every time I would go somewhere, the Rastafarians are Lion, Lioness, Wagwan, Lioness, style and fashion. I'd be like, it's for style and fashion. It's style and fashion. I'd be like, style and fashion.
And so when I had locks, people would come up to me in parking lots at concerts, white folks. Hey, you got any herb? You got any weed? All the right. time. All the yeah. time.
So needless to say, the monikers lasted, and also member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. So the 2 Z's are what that's about.
It works for you. It works for you. It works for you. Is there anything else you would like to tell the listeners about you? Any upcoming spots, promotions, any last words of wisdom, any mantras, any movie lines? Or do you want to do some liturgical dancing while I play your Lent music by, I can't remember the name. It starts with a J, I think. The artist?
I can't remember. One of them is Molly Music. That's one of my guys. But so my moniker is Living Starts Here. I chose it because, you know, I think sometimes we don't know what we're working with until, you know, you don't realize like, hey, I could be turning my head better than I am now, or I could be moving better than I am now. And I think a lot of us are caught up, depending on how you were raised, with I'm getting older and this is just what it is, and it doesn't have to be what it is. And I think just to know that there are other options out there, I think is great for aging, and that's for patients. Just know that I'm just trying to help. That's basically all I'm trying to do, is just try to help. For the therapist that's out there, the minority therapist, the female therapist, the therapist that's out there out of school and kind of questioning whether or not they should start, you know, one of my adages is do it scared. You know, it just do it. Mm. Like, just do it scared. It'll come together at some point. You know, you may not have it all together, but it'll come together at some point. And if it's in your destiny, if it's in your will, the stars will align appropriately, because all things work together the way they're supposed to at the end. So, you know, put yourself out there. You know, everybody is a quote unquote experienced person on the topic or influencer. Be an influencer yourself and just do it scared. Put the you know, the hardest part is the first post. My first post was horrible.
Good. It's okay. Everyone's is.
Everyone's is, and then you figure out your niche as you go along. Like, you know what, I can do this. I can do whatever, and it'll your confidence comes the more and more that you do said thing. Just like when you were a beginning physical therapist, you didn't know what the heck you were doing with your manual skills, and then after you had 4,000 shoulders underneath your arm, then you're like, oh, okay. So just give it a try.
And you can always delete a bad post. You can't delete a bad treatment, but you can delete a bad post.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's all I got right now. For the bodybuilder, I understand. I know the struggle. You're almost there. But yeah, that's all I got.
And that, did I pronounce it correctly? Is it liturgical, liturgical? Liturgical dance? Praise liturgical dancing? Dance.
Okay, praise, gonna, yep, praise
dancing. None for us while you put on your flex.
That's not my thing. That's not my thing. And the funny thing is, you know, before I go, the interesting thing is, because I was raised pretty strict, you know, to go out there and to do the extreme of bodybuilding. I'm like, what? Are your parents alive? Like, are they okay with this?
She's naked on stage, you know. The girl can't do it. Look at her. Look, I'll put some clothes on. Watch out, pretty much naked up there.
Pretty much. It's extreme. I had a patient call me one time, like, this is at my job now. And she was like, is this Zeus? Yes, this is me. I was online and I saw a picture. And is that you? You're so conservative. I still am.
Please send photos or of any of your shows. I'd love to see you in competition.
Sure. I'm off now. I'm just kind of maintaining at the moment. I'm still lifting because I'm trying to grow this baby. So if this business of a baby. So that's where we are now.
You zoomed out for a second. You keep freezing. It's the very end. You said, what about a baby?
No, I said, I'm just trying to grow this business baby right now.
Oh, I thought you said you're trying to grow a baby. I'm like, I didn't know you were trying to get pregnant.
No, right. I'm so funny. Bless, no, I'm trying to grow this business.
Okay.
So, I had to you, so thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. This was a pleasure. I've been smiling the whole time.
That's good. Better than
we're
frowning.
We're going to talk soon. You're right. Better than frowning. You're right around the corner. We're going to talk again. This was a blessing. And thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Dr. Principal, you are now my pal. And I'll see you on the Black and Brooklyn business board. You'll see that. You'll be on that within 3 weeks and on my website.
Well, thank you so much.
Peace.
Peace and blessings.
Peace. There you go. Now there I'm saying goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Don't go anywhere yet. I'm just going to stop recording, but I think if I hit stop recording, I won't see you. Let's see what happens. Thank you for listening to Move Evolution's Heal, Move, and Evolve podcast. Did you like this episode? Then please help us grow, rate, and review us. And if you'd like more great life fitness content, please hit the subscribe button. And find out more about Move Evolution on our moveevolution.com website to see how we can help you heal, move, and evolve.